Welcome to Masters of the Stage. This SDC Foundation program illuminates the creative processes, secret mottos, and personal and professional experiences that guide today's luminary directors and choreographers as they forge artistic careers in a profession that has no handbook. These intimate and dynamic conversations between today's most successful artists offer audiences rare insights into the challenging and ever-changing world of theater making.
Welcome, everyone, on the stream and in the room. And thank you, Lonnie and James, for being with us this evening. So just to give a little context to the discussion, I wanted to just tell a couple of little stories, if you'll humor me for a moment. The first live theatrical event that I experienced on a screen was in 1983, and it was Jack O'Brien's The Skin of Our Teeth. And I watched it. I was mesmerized. It's like it happened yesterday on my 13-inch black and white TV in my little college apartment. And it was Seda Thompson and Blair Brown. I mean, it was extraordinary. Do I wish I'd seen it live? Sure. Does it matter at this particular point in time that I didn't? Absolutely not. It was completely formative to me. I just found a New York Times interview with Jack O'Brien where he talked about the vision of putting that piece together at the time. And he said, television is usually so polite when it watches plays, Jack O'Brien said. That isn't true with sports, where you see linebackers roll over technicians with cameras and you understand the excitement of the camera being there. Television is a participant in sports, as it is in news. But somehow, when they go into the theater, they keep their white gloves on and stand back behind the balcony rail. In the mid-90s, so fast forward a bit, I was on a panel at the NEA, and it was Jane Alexander's, the beginning of her tenure, and the National Council, where the National Council were going to start approving no grants to individuals. It was a very tumultuous time. Interestingly, the most challenging thing for the panel was the conversation around work samples. At that time, work samples were not required, but they were beginning to consider work samples. And you had dance professionals in the room who had a long history of video taping dance, you know, visual artists with slideshows, recording artists with, you know, recording capacity, and the theater artists who were, you know, it was completely not fair. Even if they could imagine having the technology to dynamically capture a theater piece, no one could imagine in a nonprofit theater being able to train the staff or have the ability to do that. And yet there were the theater artists sort of pitted against the other artists with respect to work samples. And of course there were union issues and a number of other things. So you fast forward to today. The Met began its broadcast with 7 theaters and the Magic Flute, 20,000 tickets. Today, they have 2,000 screens, have broadcast to 2.7 million people, earned $60 million at an average of $23 a pop. NT Live has been seen by 5.5 million people. Research in London has shown that there's an increase in theater attendance that tracks to that by over 6%. Closer to home, since 2014, Theater Up Close has captured 22 productions of SDC members off-Broadway, and off-Broadway producers claim an uptick in sales as a result of that. And now Broadway HD is rapidly expanding its catalog. You can subscribe, you can go to a Cinecast, you can see legendary performances, cutting-edge new work, and box office blockbusters. Finally, a note, the art of it. Alan Ackburn, who is also an esteemed SDC member, but talking here as a playwright, said in the preparation of NT Live's capture of a production of Small Family Business, I don't have the camera in mind when I'm writing, he said. I just say there are 4 people on the stage and they're all reacting differently and the human eye can take it in. Unless you put a camera bang in the middle of the stalls and shoot the whole thing in a long shot, which is probably the only way to get it all in, you're going to have to start making decisions on which room you're going to be in. Yeah. So with that, you have the bios of these exceptional gentlemen in your packets. I did a summary with Maureen's help of all of the capture work, whether it's 20 productions of James that exist in the New York Library or the dozen of captures of Broadway shows, London productions, and concerts that Lonnie's done. I had this vision of reading them all, but I can't. There's too many.
That's good.
So let me start. We're going to talk about why this works today, how it works, and who directed it. But my first question is, why do you do live theater before we talk about the screen?
Why do they call it live theater? Is there dead theater?
Oh, that's interesting.
I've seen some dead theater, haven't I?
I hear live theater, I'm going, what am I missing? Where's the other kind? Well, oh God, you go.
Oh, sure. Why do you live theater? God, Laura.
I'm sorry.
That's just a big... Because
you clearly could be doing...
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like live theater for having a communal experience and being there together and watching something from the beginning to the end. And I mean, I enjoy the capture very much. I actually love it. And my key editor and the brilliant Gary Bradley is here. I love shooting theater and concerts and stuff, and then taking a couple of months and editing it and making it go quicker and better. And, you know, I mean, obviously you're watching us here, but if we were shooting it and James is looking at me and I have a camera here and here, you're seeing so much more in his face and in mine than you can ever see in the theater, because you're this close and you're all the way back there. So it's a completely, for me, valid experience on television shooting live, as well, different, completely different, but equally valid. But live is it. I don't enjoy... done one feature, and it was so not for me in that we're going to light an hour over here, and then we're going to light an hour, and then we're going to light, and then we're going to light. And I like the beginning, you know, from taking something from the beginning and seeing it through and having an experience of it. So, and I grew up here, so I got to see a lot of amazing stuff. But I was thinking when you were talking about that, I remember a production of The Price that I saw with Colleen Dewhurst and George C. Scott on television when I was very young. And that was, it's indelible in my mind. So, you know, that we, I mean, it's another question, but that we get to share these. I was saying to Jim, I was interviewed, and I said to this kid, everybody's a kid now, I said to this young guy, I said, why do you do this? And he said, well, I saw Into the Woods on television. As how could I not? I mean, did you see it? I said, oh, yeah, I saw it. But the idea that we can do this and have people in Australia and all over the world see this material and celebrate these performers. Why is Audra McDonald great? I'll show you. Here she is. She's never been there, but you get to see her. So to me, this is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. That's not the answer to your question. That's not why I do live theater. Jim, why do you do live theater?
I thought I wanted to be a film director until I did a film. And what I love about theater, this is going to sound, but you know, you're in, you're out, which is what I like. You know, you have your pre-production, you have your rehearsal, you put the show up, and then you leave. Yeah. And you guys, they keep doing it every night. We do a film, and it's completely the opposite. You know, you shoot over 30, 60 days, whatever. There's not the camaraderie there. Our actors come and go, and then eventually they all leave, and you're stuck for a year in a dark room with some other person putting it all together. And so that's one reason I like the theater better, to tell you the truth. Apropos of what you're saying, when I did the first movie, it was I just didn't really know what I was doing. And I remember pulling up to this. We were on our way to the set, and I had a driver, and suddenly there was this caravan of truck after truck after truck and whatever. And I said, oh, what's going on here? And he said, your movie. And it's just so many people involved, and it's so time-consuming. But recently I did a film digitally, which I loved. I have to say, digital filmmaking is close to theater, because you don't have to call cut. you can just talking to the actors while we're shooting and do that again, you missed this line, whatever. It was very much, had a lot of theater actors in it, and so I'm coming around, I'm thinking digital filmmaking is a kind of amalgam of live theater.
So something that I thought when I first did my first one, I thought, my film, which is not successful, and I thought, oh great, it'll be perfect forever, and it's imperfect forever, which is horrible. Whereas in the theater, you get another chance. You know, tomorrow night, it could be better.
Yeah, but sometimes it goes the other way, you know. It's perfect, and you leave, and you come back 3 weeks later,
that
is
true.
It's not perfect.
That is true.
Well, let's talk about the capture work. And James, your first experience with capturing of live theater would have been Sunday in the Park with George.
Actually, it was not. It was Table Settings, which HBO did. And they wouldn't let me direct it, and they wouldn't let the cast be in it. They all went for name actors. And they brought a director in from Canada who was a rock and roll TV director. And I should have known things were not going to go well when we were in rehearsal, and he was reading the paper the whole time and paying absolutely no attention to what was going on, because he was just going to do it like a... So that was the first one, and it is bad. And the other thing is, after we filmed it and everything, the producer called and said, I'd like you to go in the editing room, which was in L.A. I had nothing to do with it, and... I said, what's up? And she said, well, they're making us take 20 minutes out of the play after we already shot it. And I said, what do you mean they're taking 20 minutes out of my play? And they said, well, HBO has to have it be an hour and a half, you know. And I called up the head of HBO, you know, and I said, what's the deal here? And he goes, I told her from day one that it had to be an hour and a half, and I could have rewritten it or... So it wasn't a happy first experience.
So how did that, so going into Sunday and then later on, you actually did Into the Woods as the camera director as well, right?
Sunday, I also, they wouldn't let me direct. That was a PBS production. And that was pretty not so satisfying as well. It was a TV director who came in and did it. There are a lot of snapping of fingers. I don't know what the snapping of fingers is with TV directors. They're always doing that. Why is that?
You cut to the camera, it tells the camera.
I guess, you know. And I'm going like, what are they all snapping their fingers for all the time? But anyway, that was a show that had a lot of atmosphere to it. And they just brought in all this light and just slammed the thing with light and took out... Didn't know where to put the camera. It was not a happy experience. So that's when they wanted to do Into the Woods. I said, well, I want to direct it. We're going to do that. And that came out better.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
Okay. Lonnie, you spent some time in the mid-90s doing some work on soap operas. And your first capture experience then came just at the turn of the century.
On a
production of Sweeney Todd, where you were both the camera director and the stage director on the first. So James had the experience of doing the stage work and not the camera.
Yeah.
You went straight into it. Can you talk about how that came about and maybe how the soap opera work might have?
I was an actor for a while, and I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. And I was doing a lot of little off-Broadway shows as a director and not making any money. And I thought, oh, this is scary. And what occurred to me was that if I could work on a soap opera, I could stay in New York and make enough money to feed my theater habit, really. And I was very lucky. I was in a movie, Dirty Dancing, produced by a woman named Linda Gottlieb. She then took over One Life to Live, and I called her and said, can I come apprentice? And I went through every dollar I had saved for 6 months, and I shadowed a director. And they gave me a scene, which went all right. And then they gave me half a show, which went all right. And they fired someone, and they gave me a contract. and I stayed 4 years, which is 2 years too long, which is the story of my life. I had too long at the fair there. But I learned a lot. You know, it's three-camera television, which is really what live capture is. I mean, even if we're using 12 cameras, it's three cameras. It's Desi Arnaz. It's I Love Lucy. I mean, he invented it, and we're still doing it. It's the same two and one, and even if there are 12 of them, it's basically the same formula. And I was taught, and it's not brain surgery. Anybody can learn it. This is not hard. I was taught how to do it, and I got a lot of experience doing it. And I was asked by a producer of a show I was doing what I wanted to do next, and she was a very rich and very kind woman. And I said, I want to film Sweeney Todd. I had just done it at the New York Philharmonic, and we were doing it in San Francisco. And she said, oh, I'll produce that. And she wrote a check for $500,000. And she produced it. And Ellen Krass, who had done a lot of them, was the supervisor and all of that, and really sort of hands-on produced it. And Mansing back there, Gary Bradley, cut it. He edited it. It was the first thing I'd ever done. And in fact, we edited it on 9/11. I was on my way to an editing session, so I remember it very vividly. But that was the first one. But it was all because of the soap opera that I knew how to... I had a vision for it, and I knew how to do it. So that was just invaluable. And who knew, going into the soap opera, that that was going to be the end result, was I could film my work. And that was just a lucky, wonderful thing I got a chance to do.
That's great. There are probably limitless models, maybe not limitless, but a number of different models for the director role in these captures. The stage director, the camera director, who knows more about what, you know, who's the creative impulses. But I want to just focus on maybe two scenarios. One is a stage director working with another capture director, DGA director, camera director. And for just the moment, assuming that that camera capture director has experience in the theatrical form, the live theatrical form, so has a theater vocabulary, yeah, understands your work and what the stage work is and how it's put together. And then also the model where you serve as both the stage director and the camera director. So those two models. I want to just go through a few questions on those. And there's all kinds of levels within that, of course. But in all instances, I suppose even if you're serving as both, you have to collaborate with yourself quickly and efficiently. I mean, there's not a lot of time on these shoots. But from the very beginning, where I understand, I've talked with a couple of our members who've had their work captured by NT Live, and they're given essentially two or three choices about, like, do you want the proscenium shot? Do you want the show from the visual aesthetic to be the proscenium shot? Or do you want the, you know, the camera on the stage?
Oh, I see.
You know, so some basic broad strokes that they ask the stage director before they begin the capture process. How you determine sort of what that point of view is going to be, how you're going to direct the audience eye, you know, who's going to be in the trailer. So if you're a stage director working with a capture director that has some theatrical experience, how do you begin that collaboration?
Well, for me, it was just a matter of being more forcefully involved when I could be. And I think as the years have gone by, the people who are directing it are quite collaborative and let you in the booth and want to know what your opinion is. And, you know, those first things were all live switched. You know, they didn't record all the cameras. So one of the reasons all that snapping was going on was trying to actually edit it on the spot. And, I mean, you really have to have a kind of craft to, A, be the director of that, and, B, even to be sitting there trying to... It's like a runaway train, you know. But as it went along, they started recording eventually all the cameras, which is very helpful, and then you know you're covered a little bit. But I think it's really... I don't think I've ever asked for a certain director when I don't direct it, and I'm actually kind of relieved to turn it over to other people these days, because it's so time-consuming and stressful. And if that's what these people do for a living, they tend to have a better craft than I would, you know. I did one of the ones I liked the best that I did was Passion, because we didn't have an audience and we shot it on film. So we had about, I think, 5 cameras, and you can't see what's going on, which is interesting too. You have to really depend on the camera people, you know, to capture what, and we got on stage, we did everything, because that was a show that had no applause in it, which is why it lasted 5 minutes, but that's another story. Yeah, it was great, but it was it worked very well. One thing happened, you know, we lost a couple of magazines of film, and, you know, disasters happened, but yeah, it's interesting. So I don't know, you know, I think producers are very key. Who's producing, and I'm looking at the producer in the back of the room, and putting a team together and knowing the, if you get a, I would say you should get a TV director, because they will then put a team of people they've worked with on the cameras, hopefully, and who wouldn't know me from Adam, and yet they would, you know, if you do this for a living, they have a relationship with all the people that do it for a living as well, lighting designers, camera people.
Sure, yeah.
Which just, I think, these things are so fast, I think it's probably...
And have nothing to, like, the lighting has nothing to do with theatrical lighting. I mean,
completely different.
Well, yeah, I mean, because if we were lighting this and you're the audience, no one cares that this is in shadow, but in the film, we need the whole face to be lit. So immediately upstage, there's cross lighting and stuff that you would never use or need, because there's nobody sitting back there. But there's a camera here that's going to get this out of my face. Does that make sense?
My preference, I know they always put cameras all the way around, but I always prefer
that sort of theater
shooting. The Into the Woods it was all dead on. And maybe because I was the writer, but I just wanted to preserve those scenes, you know, and fairly graphically too, fairly tight on people, rather than these big wide shots that you get a lot. You know, it depends on what you like. I saw the Follies.
There were a lot of
enormous wide shots. I saw it in the movie theater too. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine on a small TV what impact that would have after a while. I want to look at the actors.
Well, the trick of, we have, you know, choreographers. You were both, obviously, directors. It's a whole other conversation with the choreographer and how you do both the intimacy of the camera and the physical nature of the dance.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I think you're a storyteller, you know, and you want to have, it's not that you want to be on top of everybody all the time, but... You do want to have the experience of the wide shot when it makes sense to have the wide shot.
And have you ever with a capture director, have you ever had a difference of in some of these that have been done recently? You just had falsettos. You don't have to name the show or the director, but do you ever have like a different point of view that you have to sort of negotiate?
Not recently. Yeah.
So sort of figuring out like where the
I learned by not doing it, what worked and what didn't. And by the way, when they did table settings, it was unusual that they were filming it.
Mm. Right.
You know, right. And it wasn't, and it was very unusual because there wasn't the off-Broadway cast that did those roles. So on top of it, I'm working with people who don't really know the show very well, and there's no
that
sense of
really
community.
That's really kind of bizarre.
And, yeah, it was very bizarre.
Now, Lonnie, have you ever had anyone other than you capture any of your work?
You've never
worked with a separate capture director. It's always been you. That's pretty fascinating, right?
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, it's important to me to capture it. I think that there's also a difference between directing and capturing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a director who is not in the trenches, you know, will... beyond the person talking, and sometimes the person listening is where the story is, but they're covering the action, and the action is not necessarily what the story is. So I particularly like to do them because I was going to show this clip from Gypsy, and I just say there's because it's such a, we all know it, but you know, and All I Need Is the Girl is, you know, he's dancing and Louise is falling in love with him, and I think a capture director would be on a, you know, full body shot of the dancer because he's dancing and that's, you know, thrilling to watch. But, you know, I chose to, at certain moments, to just go in on her face falling in love with him. because the next scene, she's going to be, her sister's going to run off with him, and we have to know that she was in love with him, and then her mother's going to screw up her life. But I think that the authors, what they're trying to do there with that song, it's not about him, it's about her. Now, a capture director will capture the dance, and that will be fine. But I think there's a way to make these cinematic where you're also revealing the subtext of the story by not necessarily what is the most moving, flashy, exciting thing on the stage. If it was, you know, if you did it on the stage, you wouldn't black out him dancing and just have a spotlight on her. You know, you'd have the choice. And if it's beautifully choreographed, as Robbins did originally, you see her the way he passes her, and you or your eye goes to her. But in a camera, I need to say, look at her. She's the one. She's the gold. It's not him. And that, I think, is the difference between a director and a capturer. And I think that the important thing that we're trying to do at SDC is to have these conversations with the capture director, if he's not artistically inclined, and go, yeah, that's great. He's great. Can you get to her? Can you cut to her? Because she's the one. That's why these conversations, even if you don't do them yourself, it's important to say to the capture director, here are 12 things that are important to me. And you may miss them because you weren't there in rehearsal, or you're reading the paper, or it's not important to you.
How I did the first time. I don't think there was a real sense of it in those days.
Well, and it's having, James, it seems to me that your experience has given you the vocabulary and the capacity. Then you don't actually have to do it because you can collaborate with someone else to do it. Versus Lonnie, you have that capacity and you want to do them both.
Well, the other thing is you're editing too. Sometimes we do them live, you know, where live. I call that live. There's no edit. So, I mean, eventually later we'll go and edit it for other broadcasts or something. But, you know, I did a production of James Passion, which I loved so much. And it was one of the first things I ever did live, what I call live, which is so terrifying. At the end of it, I went behind the truck and cried. I was just like this. But, you know, I'm taking a shot. I'm snapping because camera 7 is supposed to go there, and nobody's in the chair. And everybody in the country saw a shot of a chair. Oops. You know, if you're not editing it later, the live stuff is really tricky. But we write, you know, 1,000 camera shots on these shows so that you don't cut to the...
It is so nuts.
It's nuts.
It's nuts. People are all rattling off the stuff in the truck.
And you're concentrating.
It's a million screens. I don't know how anybody...
I find it kind of thrilling. It's like a sporting event to me. I find it kind of thrilling. But it makes me cry.
I mean, it's thrilling to have your stuff recorded. Let's just start there, you know.
Well,
I mean, if you had a choice between not a very good recording of it and no recording, you're going to go with a not a very good... I would go with a not a very good recording. I'll take it.
Yeah. Do you have a production that wasn't recorded that you really wish had been recorded?
I'd have to look at a list. I mean, you've got the public library stuff, which I think is an incredible resource. Yes. And it's too bad that it's so limited that people don't get to see,
And a lot of them, and they're beautifully filmed.
Yeah, they're really simple. They're really simple.
They're lovely.
Yeah.
They're very clean and... They tell a story
with
very few cameras.
And you know what you're seeing when you go there. You know, it is a record of something.
It is. Well, and their approach is really the scholarly and to sort of capture the artistry in a scholarly way so someone can actually see what the production was.
Yeah.
No. It is true that the archiving, the work has been fleeting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of some of the magic. And going back to that conversation we had at the NEA in the mid-90s, it's like, that's what theater is. You shouldn't ever capture it. It's meant to come and go. Well, that's gone.
Good. Yeah.
And we actually love the fact that, I mean, think of the work that will now be available for generations to come and in the educational
arena. Well, for us, you know, everyone would talk about Lorette Taylor, and I don't know why she was great. I have no idea. When I was growing up in school, they kept telling me about all these great actors, and there's a little bit of film on them, but hardly any. and or if they were filmed, it was in a movie and that wasn't their medium. They, you know, they probably were better on stage than they were in front of the camera anyway. But I think for performers and production and writing and design, I mean, why not? It's just, I agree with Jim, just anything.
Well, it's great, and also when you don't get to see a show in New York, it's nice to be able to go over there and catch it after the fact.
Yeah.
And I know the actors, I think everybody enjoys having that record, you know.
It's home movies.
Yeah, there's a real sea change with respect of trying to figure out how to, you know, protect the property and the integrity of the work and yet allow for this to really...
In the beginning, there was, you know, you had, I remember having to convince some people, you know, some actors and go, don't you want this forever? Don't you want your kids to see this or your grandkids? Yeah. I mean, why would you not want that? And I think they were just afraid of being burned by it, you know, by...
You're a lousy director.
Yeah.
Well, and there was, there was also the story that, you know, certainly in the nonprofit arena where the compensation for actors was dramatically reduced in the nonprofit arena. And so, you know, and they did that because
I've had things not recorded because one actor didn't want to do it. It was not really a real FU kind of moment, but whatever. Yeah. I know, I was asking Sondheim, I'd never seen the original Follies, and I said, do you have it? You're going to see it? There's nothing. There's no record of it. But now everybody's got a record of it because they're all like that.
They're all, you know, we've gone from the 13-inch black and white TV to the 6-inch cell phone. Let's talk about the sort of the future for a little bit and then want to open it up and see if anybody has questions. Let's say I'm a stage director. It would be a bad idea, but let's say I am.
I was going to say you were a stage.
Stage director.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to either have a meaningful collaboration with a DGA director in the capturing of my work in the future, or I want to be able to do it myself. What should I start working on?
Getting permission. I mean, if you do it yourself, I mean, I would love to take a camera in and shoot my own shows, but... You know.
But how do? But do I like? Do I? I guess I try. There aren't many soap operas anymore.
No. You mean how do you get the skills?
How do you get the skills? And how do you? How do you?
Well, I mean, if you find that there's a show being done in New York, see if you can go in and observe. I mean, that's not a big deal, and most people let you sit during the day when they're putting the cameras up and whatever. I would imagine it'd be a good start, you know, and. I don't know, you probably know better than I.
No, I think what you're saying, but the other thing that is, as I said, it's, you know, pretty much three camera, and there are sitcoms that are basically what we're doing. You know, when you see the sort of I Love Lucy form in front of a live audience, that's it. So if you really wanted that kind of experience, I would suggest you go and hang out on a sitcom set, which there are a lot more of than just, you know, shows that are captured. You know, go to L.A. and try and get yourself in there.
Isn't that hard?
I don't know. It depends on, you know, how hard persistent you are. And if you just want to hang out, I mean, I don't know. I think if you write to the right person, you might be able to. It's too bad that there's not even, and there should be Andrew Wilk from Live from Lincoln Center, our boss back there. There should be a documentary on how we film these because it is very particular. It's a weird thing that we do. People are frightened. When Jim says you're in the truck, you know, it's indescribable. Something is going on live. There are 10 monitors as I'm snapping because the person who's the changer is going camera 4, camera 3, camera 7, camera, and I have to do that so he knows to switch it to that camera. Then there's my assistant director who's saying, and camera 3, going for the close-up. No, 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 not too close. No, 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 she looks terrible. Go back. Yeah, there's. So that is happening. I'm snapping, he's flipping, and I'm watching 8 things, and it's all going on at the same time, live. Live. And it's going out with the chair in the shot and nobody else. Because, I can't say it. Oh, God, I missed it. You know, get off it. You know, get it, you know, cut to the wide shot. So it's exciting. It's a real, I find it kind of challenging and fun. But
it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. But
yeah,
it's also
really
exhilarating.
Exhausting.
It's thrilling. I think it's exhilarating. I like it. I don't know.
So for the foreseeable future, you know, these things happen very quickly, right? There's not,
we're going to do it tomorrow.
That's true. They come together at the last minute invariably, which is really I don't know why that is, but that's what seems
that's sort of the nature of the beast right now, as everybody tries to figure out how this is going to mature
too,
a little bit.
Yeah.
They're expensive, and are we going to do it? And then a show's going to close. And so we don't kind of have that rhythm yet. So given the fact that they're happening, like that we're sort of making this up as we go along to some degree or another, what's the one thing, or what's one thing or two things that... again, if I'm a stage director and I've never done this before and I just get the call that says tomorrow they're capturing your production and I feel like I've got one thing I can, I mean, you had said earlier, like, what should I make sure I do or don't do or happens?
I don't know. I mean, I would go through my show and think about in each scene what's really important to see. You know, what do you want? You know, that moment's important. That moment's important.
I think you need to go through the script with the director.
Yeah.
Very simple, you know, just, and most opportunities have existed, you know, in the last couple of decades to do that. They want to do a good job, and they're coming in not knowing the show remotely as well as you know it, so they're very open to
and that process is like, here's what the moment is in that scene.
Said. Here's what's important, and... you know, you have to be careful with the actors, too, because sometimes you'll say, don't go so close on this person.
That's
this
right.
person is not going to be
happy about that.
As a stage, that's the hard thing. You work with these casts, and some of them know exactly the camera's over there, and somebody who's a total stage animal, it's like, you know, to the back of a 1,000-seat theater, it's like, you know.
And also, HD is very unforgiving.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's, you know, we can take the detail out of the cameras and we can do certain things to flatter people or to, but you see everything. You know, people of a certain age.
You can always, you know, the technology now in editing allows you to push in, but it doesn't allow you to pull back, you know.
Once you're in, you're in. That's
if somebody's dead and you're there,
that's very true.
You're never going to be able to pull back, you know. But if they're back here and you want to go a little closer, you can usually have the...
Be safe.
You're a little better off.
Well, there are these new cameras, these 4K cameras, where, you know, it can be the whole thing, and I can just get to almost Jim's head.
And the camera itself is about that bit, you know.
Oh, it's extraordinary. But you don't lose any detail when you blow it up, which we didn't have this is relatively new, 4 or 5 years with 4K? I don't know.
I think it's a good question about, which I always wrestle with, because I really want to capture my things myself, even if it's just me and a camera in the back, and I wish we could find a way to do that. I can't do it, but somebody with a cell phone can sit
and do it unlawfully. Yeah.
Do it, and the next thing you know, it's on YouTube. But I can't do it, you know. Hmm.
So, yeah, and I think things are evolving.
Yeah.
And I certainly know we here at SDC are interested in trying to find the right balance between protecting our members' interests and work and property and, you know, bringing the barriers down, because it's definitely, it's here. It works.
For sure.
And
it's for young directors, it's a tool to show what they can do and also gives them opportunities with a camera. You can get a camera for nothing nowadays. And I don't know. It's a delicate issue, I know.
Just the other thing I just want to add is that it's highly collaborative in a very different way from the theater. Do you know, it's a different set of collaborators. It's your producer, it's your cameraman that you're talking to and trying to tell them how you want it. You know, listen to the music, it go a little quicker. You know, you get to work with a lot of different kinds of people who have different skills, and you know, you have to learn how to, if you're going to direct them yourselves, just how to communicate with them. But the ones that here in New York that I've worked with, they're expert. And they're great guys, too. I mean, they want it to be beautiful. I feel everybody has the same feeling we have about making it right. And that's partly because of I've worked a lot for Live from Lincoln Center. Andrew Wilk is the executive producer. He cares a lot. And you have to work with people who want it to be beautiful. But mostly they do. They really do.
And you have to work with the actors, too. You really have to get them in the right mindset for the day that they're, you know, don't beat yourself up if you screw up a lyric, and, you know, that just, it's nerve-wracking because they usually only shoot them once or twice, and the actors get very hard on themselves, and And also such scale.
Yeah.
You know, what the scale they should play.
Did you tell them to turn it down? What do you say to your actors, like, if they're filming? Do you...
Well, every actor's different, you know, but first of all, it's distracting.
Yeah.
You know, I see you're going to be distracted because there's movement of cameras going on. You're not used to it. Mm-hmm. And the lighting is suddenly different. There's so many things that are suddenly different. And you just have to make sure that they stick to the material and the story and just try not to be distracted by it, be there as a team, you know. And scale-wise, I always say don't play to the back of the house, play to the back of the orchestra, you know.
That's good. So, the other thing you talk about, the cameras moving, sometimes what I do is I'll bring the cast out and I'll show them all of the moving cameras. And I'll have them. Yeah. I'll have them move. I'll go, guys, and they'll just like do all of their, you know. And I go, that's all. That's the vocabulary. That's what you're gonna see. There's nothing other than this. This is it. Go play it. But they're gonna. But don't surprise them. It's like all of a sudden the camera's like doing that. And, you know, you have to show them what it is so they can go, okay. Yeah.
Questions? Yes.
How has directing for TV or film or through a camera affected how you direct for the stage and vice versa?
What a fascinating question. Affected, I think they're two very different things, honestly. When I'm directing something for the stage that I know will be captured or hope it will be, I don't change anything. And I've never gone the other way, you know, obviously. So I don't know how it's affected me. I think probably not very much is the answer, because I think the acting is the acting, and it's just we're adding this whole other set of elements to it, but I don't think very much about it. I don't know.
Time is a different issue in each. The theater, you know you've got tomorrow and the next day and the next day. In film, if you're on a location and you have a certain number of pages you have to shoot in a day, you're up against time a little bit. I found also some film actors do not want to rehearse, which makes me a little nuts.
Yeah.
But, and some want to rehearse, you know, so you're also, you're filming a film where you may be doing the most important scene in the third day or second day, and it's nerve-wracking. But the other good news is you just keep there doing it till you get what you need, you know. But I think they're different. I think they're completely different. I found as directing for the stage, you have to be very careful when you ask for what and when you ask for it. If I know I want something out of somebody, I don't tell them to do that the first day and push them. I learned, don't push them there. Let's see what they come with. And then when you as a team get together and figure out the tone and language of a stage piece, then you can start really refining it. But film is different because you have to really know in that exact moment what you want. Or what I like to do when I shoot is, I call it small, medium, and large. I said, let's do a really intimate take here, and then I go, let's push it a little bit bigger, and, you know, just let loose on it. And they know that I have those tools to work with when I get in an editing room, because I may not want an intimate moment there, you know, or I may need an intimate moment, and I just try to protect myself to know that I have what I need, you know. There's some protection now with these tape musical things anyways, because if you screw up a note, you can fix the note after the fact, you know. There are some kinds of things that you have a little bit of.
It's really true.
You know. But, you know, and every movie's different, and every stage capture is different. Some you have more time than others, you know. It's kind of, play it a little, be relaxed about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm often to know the process of a live. I mean, do you sit down and have a paper check? And then there's the rehearsal of the cameras? Just kind
of, so. We get less and less time all the time for them.
Like Passion, how long did you rehearse Passion? With the actors, but prior.
Well, we did it in Chicago, and then we did it here.
Oh, I didn't
so that,
that
we,
okay.
You know, the actors were done. I'm trying to think of the how it goes, but usually in a lot of the captures, we get the cameras. the day before or the day of. So it's really, really quick. And usually, because it's so expensive to have them in the building, they're there for, you know, the day, maybe the day before, then the day you shoot, and the day you shoot, and then they take them away.
So do they come and watch rehearsals?
They don't. Sometimes we get them to watch. I mean, when they're one day wonders, as Andrew calls them, you know, we're doing it live that night, and it's the first time it's been seen. So, but if you did, when I shot, you know, Gypsy or Jonathan Kent's Gypsy or John Doyle's company, because mine is a different one, I got to watch them both a lot. And then I got the cameramen to come one performance, but you have to pay them to show up. They get a day rate to sit there and watch it. That's a lot of money. So
did you do a scratch tape of anything?
I always do a, I mean, I they allowed me to do a scratch tape. And actually what I do is I do a scratch tape in three angles. I'll do a scratch tape back there. I'll do two sides. So I know exactly when I'm writing the camera shots what that camera can see. I've already looked in the lens, so I know. And I'm wrong a lot, but I'm more right than wrong because I at least have had a shot at it.
You tape it in advance and go ahead of it yourself?
I tape it in advance from three different things.
Right.
And then I set it up on my computer and I have the three screens of each angle and I write the camera shots based on what I've seen. That's if it's been up already. If it's not been up, I don't know. It's just guessing. But I've done enough of them to know pretty much what I'm going to get. And then you write, which takes me a long time,
right.
1,000 camera shots, which is... For each moment, I know where each of those 10 cameras are focused. I've told them where to look at each one. And then the one I'm on, I'm writing, you know, you have a 5-second push in into her eyes and go. And so, but I've also covered other things in case that messes up because it might mess up. It likely won't be as good as I'd like it to be. I don't know if I'm answering your question. It's very fast.
It's a lot of math and a lot of geometry.
It's a lot about prep. It's all about prep. And you got to go in there, and then the cameramen have your shots on cards or little rollers so that they know after their light goes off, their next number is a wide shot. So they widen out to get ready for you to call that when you snap. It's hard to explain a little bit, which is why we should do some sort of film on it. But
are they on the stage? Like when we went to the talk back for the Net Live, mm-hmm. The cameramen are actually on the stage.
It depends on what they'll allow.
Or it depends on the aesthetic choice, right? Because as James was saying, the proscenium shot, traditional theater versus
I think
the
Hans. You have both. I mean, you have all different choices, you know, as to how close you want to go and all of that. But in my shows, I tend to, maybe unlike James, I like to see both eyes. I like to see close-ups that are like here and not just there. I kind of like that, just a taste thing. So I try and get them on the stage as much. I frankly don't care about what the live audience is experiencing, which gets me in a little trouble. Because it's like I know millions of people, hopefully, are going to see this. And the 1,000 people that saw it that night, if they saw a cameraman, I'm not that upset about it. Producers don't feel that way. They don't want to see them as much as possible. But in a lot of the captures, what I try and do is... You know, you go out and you try and tell the audience how exciting it is that they're part of this wonderful thing and so that they get on board with it. But
sometimes the audience is cast. Right?
Yeah, I only did that once, but mostly they can't afford to do that. They can't give up a whole performance
to do that.
You know, so it's mm-hmm. tricky.
Thank you.
Yes.
How do you get through the equity blockade for doing filming? Like if you're doing archival, is there somebody in equity that you contact?
Well, they have a contract, and they get paid extra for doing it. And they all have to, I think, agree to do it.
Yeah, there's...
You know, somebody could say, I don't want to do it. And
I think it's one is out. I think it's got to be unanimous.
Well, you can shoot the rehearsal, like the last run through in the studio, correct?
Well, SDC, I mean, there are two questions there. The archival... capture is a different animal than the capturing of live work to be exploited, distributed through channels like Broadway HD are sort of two different things. Because when you say archive capture, I think you want one that you can take home. And we are not there yet. I'm not even sure we're close to there. And I don't know if we'll actually, I don't know if we'll ever be there or if we should ever be there, because we do have a lot of issues with property rights, and it's hard to
figure.
The
problem, as I said, is that people are
shooting
it anyway.
So, I know.
You know, when it's your work and you're going, why can they do it?
Why can they have it? And we've tried to do things like get B-roll released for our members. And, you know, oddly, the producers didn't want to give us B-roll, which was so bizarre because we got Equity to give it.
Really?
Yeah, it was very strange.
I think you're right, though. We're in the middle of something that's not yet figured out what it is.
But those are different. Those are different things. So when there's
that was a great advantage when we were allowed to do the rehearsal footage. I mean, for lighting designers, for particularly the lighting designers, it really sped up tech a lot, being able to have that.
We've done that in most of our agreements and Equity's agreements. You can now capture in the rehearsal hall, and for the purposes of transfer design, folks can see it.
Well, I tell you who really benefits from it are understudies, because they have it and they can study the blocking and everything.
Yeah.
And, it's really, really helpful.
Doesn't that depend on the contract you're working under?
Yes, it does. It does.
If you're working under a showcase code for Equity,
I don't know anything about we don't have showcase.
And the story says there is absolutely no.
Yeah,
Off-Broadway, you can film. And you can
I'm speaking to SDC contracts.
Yeah,
I don't.
But that's the thing, though, that for directors, if you're working for, even if it's on a showcase level, Equity's tied your hands completely and says there is no filming, zip, zero, zilch, none at all. Mm-hmm. So,
Since I run SDC and not Equity,
no,
I can't really do
anything.
But we try to use our influence. But again, I think what you'll find is, you know, Actors Equity, and honestly, we are the less a producer pays, the fewer rights they have. I mean, it's really the only thing we've got. So if Equity, you know, I don't know what Equity's rationale is, but my guess is those actors are paid nothing in those environments, and so for nothing you get nothing.
They would like the videos, sure.
Not necessarily, but anyhow.
So it's the title of this evening that got me here, because of the experience I had as a director. It says, "So who really directed this?" is your title.
Oh,
So what made you choose that? Because that's what brought me here.
Well, I think this question of these two models of a stage director and a director of a capture and the collaboration between the two. I mean, it's a question that is open, as we are now in Lonnie's case, because he captures all of his own work, he directed it.
Right. It's interesting, and like some of these television musicals they're doing now, it's a stage director and a TV director both taking credit as directed by.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the precedent is for the theater. I think it's also depends. I mean, I like to be in the editing room with the material, and the director is generally off on the next gig, but does that make me the director? I don't really care. I just want to turn out a good memory of whatever our product is. You know?
Well, 10 years ago, SDC contracts all said the billing requirement was originally directed for the stage by. So if you go back, you know, to things that are being acquired and recirculated now, you'll see originally directed for the stage by. And I can remember when Rent was captured, and the question was whether we were going to be able to negotiate with the DGA for Michael Greif to get directing credit, and it was like, and we were arguing about this originally directed by the stage, and I can remember saying, what does that mean? Mm. Like, originally directed for the stage by. This would be actually
directed.
Yeah, well, but it's like, this
cases.
Actually is Michael Greif's direction of Rent. This isn't like the third revival from the left that he's getting some footnote credit for. This is his production that is being captured. And so we actually were able to, and that was the beginning of change, and now all of our agreements have changed. It's directed for the stage by. No, originally, because that implied that there was some other
change or something.
There was some, so directed for the stage by. And we also worked with the DGA.
Why? Well, that's interesting that it's not directed by and then directed for TV by.
Which it should be, but that's how they do.
Well, that we could get the directed.
I could make an argument for that.
You know, getting the DGA to agree to the director word was hard enough because they only the DGA agreements call for like one director.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of trick with
director on.
Well, director of photography, but I think that it would be.
I know Kenny Leon when he did.
That started with. Which was the first, Sound of Music.
Yeah.
So it was when we were able to get, but the DGA agreed to give Rob Ashford and
both
the television
credit.
Directors both directing
that's
credit
unusual.
And
that's
both
unusual.
Eligibility for then
award
Emmys.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Which, so we have some work to do, and SDC's having interesting conversations with producers of this new form about how that will all. Because it's clearly not just the stage director that's directed
capture. It's a tricky thing because there is some sort of authorship in some ways as to what the television director, depending on if James is not there to edit it or if there are other shots to cover, are telling you to look at. That is a kind of direct. You can't say it's not directing that because you are literally directing the eye to look here. I choose to see this. So, and yet it's based, not based, it is capturing the thing that it is, you know, that is the stage production. So I think it's very semantics, it's tricky. You know, James had an experience, obviously, where the camera director on Sunday maybe did not fulfill the expectation or chose to show or lit it in a way that was not what the piece wanted.
Yeah,
it was
so interesting because he did, he did the original Sweeney Todd.
It was Terry Hughes, wasn't it?
Yeah, which I thought was good,
yeah.
You know, but for some reason on Sunday, it's a different kind of show, it was not good.
Mm.
And I suppose that's probably the way it just goes down sometimes, or different kinds of shows, different looks. It's a little bit, it's a curiosity.
So it's an interesting question.
Yeah, because I have something I directed for the stage, and there's video excerpts of it, but my name isn't on it. The person who filmed it is on it.
Well, that's.
And I wasn't a member of SDC.
Well,
when this happened.
That's the problem! That's what we're here for. Right.
So that's why, you know, it bothers.
I don't blame
you. Sure. Yeah.
And the other director didn't sort of feel necessary to give you the proper credit. Yeah.
Well, we're happy you're here now.
Yes.
Yay.
Other questions? Yes.
Sure. What's the difference between capturing, say, the live stage show versus, say a concert, like, say, Sweeney Todd?
Nothing. Yeah. It's the same. Just, it's, you know, you're capturing. I mean, the thing about the concert's a little bit easier in terms of because it's mostly very front, so that the camera positions are easier in some ways. But there's really nothing different about it. I don't think it's just you're capturing it with, and usually 10 or 12 cameras in my case, so it wouldn't change for a concert as it would for, although, you know, I mean, obviously size is different. When I did Lady Day for HBO, it's a woman in a room, and you know, so we had five or six cameras, and did some specialty shots and stuff like this. It was a little different, but no, it's the same. The more people you have, probably the more cameras you probably need because you're covering more, and so it's. But I don't think there's much of a difference, frankly.
Yes,
I don't know if you'd ever want to direct an immersive theater piece, but how would you approach it?
Oh, it's really hard. Filming it was.
I'm sorry.
An immersive piece.
Oh, immersive. That's
like, how would you capture the Great Comet?
Oh, I probably put GoPros on everybody's head.
That's a great solution.
That's all I would do. I wouldn't even attempt to.
And a year of editing. A year of editing. Good luck. Yeah. It's very hard because also, I mean, there's just sort of the mathematics of jumping the line and someone on one side of the frame, and then you're cutting from a camera that's not like it's very tricky. I've been asked sometimes to do something in thrust, and I've looked at it and I said I can't figure it out.
You also, when you do that, you have to deal with the audience too, which is really a drag when you've got somebody picking their nose there, behind the actor acting, you know, or they're talking or they're on the cell phone. You know.
So true.
Or sleeping, yeah.
It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if anybody can crack that, right? Because when you talk about, I mean, I often think this is a different form. This is a new form. This mm-hmm. is a different beast that is coming together at
yeah,
this moment with technology.
Reality comes in.
Well, it is. I have a nephew-in-law that's in virtual reality and is a theater geek, and he's playing around with it. But the whole immersive seems to conflict with the screen, but I'm sure it won't for long, or maybe that's my age.
It could be. Maybe there are ways to do that. It'd be fun.
If you had time. You know, the thing is, we usually have a couple of days. Yeah.
Or if you did it four times and put the cameras in different places each time.
I think it can become disorienting if what is front is different each time. I think that will make you go a little bit like, anyway, that's
my isn't that what some of those immersive shows try to do to you as the audience member is? Yeah.
Not
anyhow.
Anyway,
other questions?
How do you feel about immersive theater? That's your next talk about.
Week. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
I went on to Broadway HD and also Amazon.
What is Broadway HD at this house?
It's streaming of Broadway shows.
Well, it just distributed your falsettos.
I have no idea how to even see that. How do you see that?
You have to subscribe. You can subscribe. It's
do you have an app or do you?
It's like
It is
ironic. I have no idea how to do that. And
your work is
here.
All over. Yeah, so you can, like, my mom has a subscription to Broadway
HD. So you subscribe to you, and then and then
you watch Broadway shows on an app or on your TV or on your computer on your iPad.
How do you access it?
Stream.
Go to a website. I mean, you go to BroadwayHD.com kind
correct.
Of thing.
Yeah.
Got it.
On the computer, but on the phone we have a Broadway HD app. So
and do you subscribe to whatever you want to watch, or per show, or
monthly,
either?
Or yearly. They have a yearly.
Monthly or yearly.
Yeah, it's like $100.
It's like Netflix.
Or Amazon.
Only it's Broadway shows.
And you're, if I may, I don't want to turn this conversation.
No.
I'm curious. So, did you do falsettos? Did you know you were doing Broad? Did we know we were doing falsettos on Broadway HD? We did.
Yes.
And you're not involved with it being in the movie theaters. That's a whole other. Who's that?
No, it was Screamboot.
I see. Cool.
And we like.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah.
Most online users.
Are you doing old shows? Are you doing like the original Sunday in the Park? Is that available on Broadway
HD?
I
think we tried to license it, and I don't know why we haven't been able to license it.
We'll talk.
So that's
we actually wanted to do the one that was on Broadway.
Yeah.
But they're waiting for a movie.
Yeah, it is.
That's a
yeah, they are.
That's
yeah,
interesting.
They are.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'll send you a
So when I was watching the trailer, the cast name was listed, but I could not find the director's name.
No,
but for example,
what show?
It was the winter, the Christmas show, Not White Christmas.
Oh, the holiday.
Holiday Inn.
Well, we're in the, you know, we're literally sort of build. Is it like you're building the plane as you're flying it, or you're building the bridge as you're walking across it, or whatever? All of this is currently in You know, we're working on this stuff every day. And part of what we're working on is ensuring that we're trying to create some sort of standard across these captures and how the work's exploited and how our members are credited and compensated. We're trying to figure out, because many of our agreements have provisions that were embedded in 1962 when all there was the American Playhouse. Yeah. And it was captured once and shown once, and that was that. Yeah. So we're on it. We're on it.
Well, it's good for everybody.
Yeah. It is good for everybody. Like, we completely, and you know, it's been Pam McKinnon, current president of SDC, was really, although the board has been the last few years, but she was very clear, this is only going to work if we can help these companies develop catalogs. Without catalogs, you're not going to be able to compete with the, you know, subscription-based streaming, binging nature of the American consumer today. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to figure out how to get our members in this game.
Yeah, cool.
So,
sounds good.
I think, are we? Yes. I've got the yes. Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
This podcast was brought to you by SDC Foundation. SDC Foundation events and programs are designed to offer access, opportunity, and community to directors and choreographers at all levels of their career. To find out more, visit our website at www.sdcfoundation.org.